Hey, everybody, welcome to the Redeem the Day podcast, a 7-episode series aimed at helping you be more purposeful, present, and productive. I'm Jordan Rayner, author of Redeeming Your Time, and I'm joined by Mark Batterson, author of Do It for a Day and Win the Day. In this episode of Redeem the Day, we're going to be sharing why Christians need a unique relationship with the word no, the evidence that Jesus himself was comfortable telling people no, and a few of our favorite practices that help us say no more frequently. All right, Mark, I want to start here. You know, it's going to come to a surprise to nobody that this podcast on time management has an episode dedicated to the word no. Feels like everybody's talking about this. I think Christ followers know we got to have a unique relationship with this word because the modern wisdom on this two-letter word, in my experience, rarely aligns with Jesus' example. A couple weeks ago, I was watching this popular TED Talk that I think summarizes conventional wisdom on this idea. The speaker said, you know, when deciding whether to do something, if you feel anything less than, wow, that would be amazing, absolutely, then say no. And that's just not the example of Jesus, right? There were times in which he said no, but there were other times in which he sacrificially said yes to things he probably didn't want to do, but he did because he loved others. What do you make of this tension? What do you make of Jesus sacrificially sometimes saying yes to things he probably didn't want to do?
Well, I'm going to back up one step. Job 11:6 is one of my bedrock verses. It says true wisdom has two sides. And so in my experience, where there is the tension of opposites, you're pretty close to the truth. And you've got to learn to flip the coin. And so I'll do a little coin flip right here. Now, I'm not sure who said this first, but when in doubt, probably Andy Stanley. And so, and I know he said this, you know, saying yes to one thing is saying no to something else. And so it's living in this tension of what is the best and highest yes, and realize that everything is a trade-off. Everything is a trade-off. And so we are trading our time for something. And I think you look at Jesus' life and it's fascinating, Jordan, because, you know, he spent most of his time with these 12 disciples. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, most of us think we need to influence more people, more people, more people. But he really focused on influencing a pretty small group. And it sure seems to me like it paid off.
You shared in Win the Day, I think it's related to this topic, how your counselor once pointed out to you that Jesus disappointed pretty much everybody. And it seems like this has been a struggle for you and for me too, just we're perennial people pleasers. So how does that truth that Jesus said no to a lot of people, how does that provide you encouragement?
Yeah, well, let me just hop on the couch with my counselor and recreate that moment.
Yeah, please do.
Because I literally said to my counselor, I said, I don't want to disappoint anyone ever. And there was a pregnant pause, and my counselor said, Mark, that's an awfully big burden to bear. And it seems to me like Jesus disappointed people all the time. Jordan, I tend to be a people pleaser. And what I've discovered is that my default setting generally is yes. You know, I'll give a classic example. I pastor a church, thousands of people. You know, on any given Sunday, I might say hi to 500, 600 people. And often I'll have several people walk out and say, hey, could we grab coffee or could we get together? And Jordan, it's the craziest thing in the world. I find myself in those settings saying, yes, 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 yes. And without any kind of, what do you want to meet about? Maybe I'm the best person, maybe I'm not. I think understanding your default setting is a good starting point. And then I know we'll get into some of the practices, but in my experience, because I'm not good at saying no, I've had to employ other people to say no for me and make some pre-decisions that make that no for me as well.
What do you think, other than people-pleasing, what are the things that keep us from saying no? What is that internal resistance that's happening there?
Well, we don't want to let anybody down. So are we living for the applause of people, or are we living for the applause of nail-scarred hands? And I think we don't give ourselves a whole lot of grace. I think if people really knew how busy everybody else is, we would be a lot more graceful, and we would realize, you know, we think to ourselves, I'm only sending them one email or one text. Why can't they immediately? Well, because there's 100 other people who think that they're the only one sending that email or sending that text. And so I think we've got to recognize that time is a limited resource. And at the end of our lives, by the way, I'm not sure anybody is going to want the distinction of I answered the most emails of anybody. That is my claim to fame.
All right. So I want to get practical in a minute and talk about tools that we all can use to be better at saying no. Because while Jesus did say yes sometimes, he also said no. And I think we got to get good at developing this habit. But before we go any further, so much of the content in this world helping people say better at saying no is coming from people like you and me, Mark, who are authors. Like, we're saying no to different things. And I just want to, we're saying no to the proverbial coffee meeting of, hey, can I grab coffee and pick your brain on something? I want to look our listeners in the eyes and try to put ourselves in their shoes. Like, what else are people saying no to? Because most people aren't writing books and have a bunch of people asking them to get coffee. Like, what are you finding, at least maybe in your congregation, people are having a really hard time saying no to? I know for us, it's extracurricular activities with kids, right? It's a good thing, right? What else are you seeing that people are struggling with here?
Well, I think we're all going in so many different directions. That's part of the challenge. It's not just sports. It's music lessons. It's, you know, if you have a child with special needs, that entails a lot of extra effort. And I think it was Elizabeth O'Connor who this moment when Jesus cast out a demon and the demon's name was Legion. And of course, Legion would be a reference to a military unit in the Roman army consisting of about 6,000 soldiers. In other words, this person was pulled in 6,000 different directions. And Elizabeth O'Connor basically said, all of us are Legion. And so we go in so many different directions that I think there are seasons in life where, hey, we need to just cut back on the extracurricular. Our kids aren't going to suffer too much if they're in two sports instead of three. And then it's even, you know, travel leagues and the way that athletics has evolved, even since when I was a kid, is like next level. If you aren't playing a sport year round, it's like you're falling behind. So, you know, it's the proverbial hamster wheel, and all of us get on it, and it's really hard to get off of it.
Yeah. In Win the Day, you mentioned your stop doing list. I, in business, have had stop doing meetings with my team where everybody has to look at each other's to-do lists, not their own, and say, hey, listen, based on the goals we defined, which if this is a struggle for you, go back to episode 3. Based on the big, hairy, audacious goals we defined, that on your to-do list is not aligned with where we're going. You need to kill it, right? I think we got to do the same thing in our families, right? We need to schedule stop doing meetings with our spouses, with our kids, take out our to-do list and our calendars, especially the recurring items, right? The weekly stuff, the monthly stuff, and just ruthlessly kill some things, right, that just aren't essential. Right? What's on your stop doing list? I'm curious.
Well, it's always under evaluation. I would say, though, Jordan, that big picture for me, redeeming my time, you know, on an annual basis actually begins with an annual retreat that my wife and I do. And we go over budget and calendar, often word of the year, verse of the year. Go over a gratitude journal from the previous year. What it does is allow us to prioritize. And we do what Stephen Covey advocated in Seven Habits, this idea of putting the big rocks in the jar first. And so you begin to schedule out a year, and then some things fall off the list. I'm not going to have time to do this or that. And then you begin, a lot of it is calendaring. If you don't control your calendar is going to control you. And so I even recognize, hey, during a writing season, which for me is my birthday, November 5th until Super Bowl Sunday. So I give myself about 3 months to actually write a book. It starts with a retreat. It ends with a retreat. But I do less preaching and I don't take meetings, generally speaking, outside of our staff during that season. And so it's about proactively making those pre-decisions in order to prioritize that goal that you have. That's really, it's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you're going to try to be all things to all people and you're going to become nothing to nobody.
I love how all these episodes are connecting together, because on the next episode, we're going to talk more about our calendars and our time budgets for our days. But this is also connecting to something we talked about in episode 3, that if you get really good at setting big goals, the rocks for your life, and putting those into place in your calendar first, it makes it a heck of a lot easier to say no to lesser things, right? So you mentioned the annual retreat, Mark. On a daily, weekly basis, what are some other practical things that you do that you have found helpful to say no to requests for your time?
Well, I made a decision years ago. I asked our stewardship team to put limits on me. Limit the number of days that I can travel. Limit the number of boards that I can serve on simultaneously. Why? Because they're making that decision for me. I try to empower my assistant to say no for me. And sometimes, you know, people take offense at that. But here's one little trick of the trade, Jordan, that I think you'll enjoy especially, but I think listeners will enjoy this as well. I call it doing the math. I once calculated, you know, number of people who attend our church times a half hour message and kind of that total time. And if I remember right, it was something like 271 days of collective listening time for one 30-minute message. And then I did it for writing, like take my best-selling book times the 5 or 6 hours it takes the average person to read it. And I think it adds up to like 1,741 years. I do the math because it motivates me, Jordan, to leverage my time to those highest ROI activities, the things that are going to make the biggest difference. Now, don't get me wrong, a one-on-one meeting can be life-changing, but it's also 1 hour times one person. And so what I want to do when I write a book is give a lot of people the best 6 hours I have. It'll take me 3 months to give you the best 6 hours I have, but I'm going to spend 6 hours with you and you're going to get the best that I have. And so it's almost like a Jedi mind trick, but it allows me to prioritize some of those big rocks and make sure that I focus my energy and time on those things.
In Redeeming Your Time, I offer 8 questions for readers to help them say yes or no to requests for their time. And one of them is this the most generous use of my time? And this is such a great example of what you're talking about. If I came to DC, it was like, hey, Mark, let's grab coffee. The most generous use of that hour is actually not you saying yes to me, right? It's saying no so that you can more generously serve the other people you're called to serve in your work. And that might be true for you, listener. If somebody's asking you to volunteer at church on Wednesday nights, that might not be the most generous, highest leverage use of your time. It might be serving your family or serving your neighbors that you're called to minister to. Mark, I want to go back to something. You basically have other people say no for you, right? Stewardship committee at the church, your assistant. For those who don't have an assistant, I'm trying to think out loud about what are some tools our listeners can use to employ this same principle of allowing other people to say no for us. Like one thing that pops into my mind is sharing your calendar with your friends, right? And putting a rule in place to say, if I got a request for my time that's going to take more than X number of hours, right? 3 hours, whatever, I go to my friends, this list of friends, and ask them if it's a good use of my time. I'm just thinking out loud, but any other ideas here for people who don't have an assistant or a board to say no for them?
Well, if you have a spouse, that's a good place to start. And you have to be careful. You don't want to stress out your spouse with 1,000 request, because that can turn them into your assistant. And in my experience, Jordan, that's not going to end well.
Yes, that's exactly right.
But I do think you want to prioritize together and always try to bounce significant things off of my wife. And by the way, for speaking engagements, I only do 7 overnight speaking engagements a year. And my oldest son lives in California. There's a pretty good chance that a few of those are going to be in California, near where he lives. So you find different ways to, what are the priorities here and what are the high leverage points? And you use your time for those things that are going to be the most fulfilling and also the most impactful.
One practice I've started in the last few years that's been really helpful is I just delay my response, especially to things that look like really great opportunities. I think you struggle with this like I do. Everything looks like an amazing opportunity. And for those in particular, I sit on it. I make myself sit on it for 24 hours before I respond. I just won't respond to the email. And if it's in person, like if somebody, I'm at church and they're like, hey, you want to come to, Puerto Rico next weekend? I'll be very tempted to say yes in the moment, but I'll use the old spouse excuse, which is glorious. It's like, I got to check with my wife, and I'll wait 24 hours. And usually the excitement and the luster wears off in one day. It allows me to say no a heck of a lot more.
Yep. I love it. The old 24-hour rule. You have to sleep on it. And then you have to figure out, how is this going to, am I going to be energized by this a month out, 2 weeks out, 1 week out? Or is this something that is going to stress me out? And it's not always easy predicting that, but I think over time you get a little bit better at those filters.
Proverbs, I can't remember exactly where it says this, but it says, it is foolishness to quickly make a vow and only later reconsider it, right? That's what this is talking about. Delay your response. So I mentioned one of the questions I love that helps me say no. Is this the most generous use of my time? Are there other questions that you've got in your head or maybe even written down somewhere that help you say no?
You know, a lot of them are these internal filters that are intuitive over time. I'll give you an example. I used to love being on the big stage. More and more, I enjoy spending time with leaders or pastors where it's going to be a smaller gathering, because I know it's going to be less taxing in terms of preparation, and it's going to be more life-giving, and there's going to be more dialogue. And so it's almost learning your preferences over time and knowing those environments that are going to energize and those that aren't. I have to say, though, I love that generous question. Probably my equivalent would be, is this going to be life-giving for me and for the people I'm with? And that's not always easy to answer, but in a sense, I think I get pretty good at that. And it's another occasion, Jordan, where I don't want to beat a dead horse, but this idea of do the math has really become a matrix for me. And it's not just with sermons or with books. If I'm with 10 leaders, but those 10 leaders lead organizations or churches that number in the thousands, if you do the math there, you're actually with 10 people that are impacting tens of thousands of people. And so I see that as a high leverage point, and that helps me maybe justify, hey, I'd rather hang out with these 10 people than even be on a stage with 1,000 people.
Great. Yeah, I'll just offer one more question for listeners to think through when they're trying to decide whether to say yes or whether to say no. Am I trying to do good or make myself look good by saying yes to this request for my time? Because for me, a lot of times, if I'm honest, I'm just trying to make myself look good, right? And that's a lame reason to say yes to something. All right, guys, hopefully that gave you a lot of practical tips to help you say no more frequently. But remember, we Christians ought to be marked by a unique relationship with this two-letter word. Yes, we got to get better at saying no, but we've also got to embrace the tension that sometimes the Holy Spirit moves us to say yes sacrificially, right? And I'm praying that perspective and these practical tools served you guys well. Hey, up next, the final episode of the Redeem the Day podcast. Mark and I are talking about how we can embrace productive busyness while ruthlessly eliminating hurry from our lives while eating frogs. I promise that'll make sense in a minute. You don't want to miss that final episode. We'll see you there.